You're listening to West Virginia Public Broadcasting, West Virginia Morning. Flanked by law enforcement officers from across West Virginia, Governor Tomlin has vetoed a bill that would have allowed permitless carrying of concealed weapons in the state. Ashton Maher reports.
House Bill 4145 removes the permitting and safety training requirements to carry a concealed weapon in West Virginia for anyone over the age of 21. The bill also puts a provisional permitting process in place for 18 to 20-year-olds and includes a $50 tax credit for anyone who goes through the permitting process. Supporters of the bill say it is a constitutional right to carry concealed without a permit, but law enforcement officials have pushed back, calling the bill a threat to themselves and the public. Raleigh County Sheriff Steve Tanner says police officers support the constitutional rights of citizens on a daily basis, putting their own lives on the line.
We do not oppose good laws, but when something is obviously a danger to law enforcement and the public, we have to express our concerns.
With the veto, House Bill 4145 heads back to both the House and Senate, where lawmakers will have the chance to reconsider the bill. It takes only a simple majority vote to override a gubernatorial veto. Lawmakers have already taken similar action on vetoes for bills to make West Virginia a right-to-work state and to repeal the prevailing wage. For West Virginia Public Broadcasting, I'm Ashton Mara in Charleston.
The House Finance Committee took up a bill yesterday to raise the state's tobacco tax, but as Liz McCormick reports, it died before making it to the House floor.
Senate Bill 420 was approved by senators earlier this session and made its first appearance in the House Finance Committee Thursday. Delegates deliberated the bill for a total of 3 hours before voting to kill it. The bill was presented on behalf of Governor Tomlin and originally included a 45-cent tax increase on each pack of cigarettes. As it passed the Senate, the bill bumped that tax up to a dollar. The House Finance Committee adopted an amendment to the bill Thursday afternoon, reducing the tax once again to the 45-cent per pack rate, as well as two other amendments. One removed the tax hike for all other tobacco products, leaving only a tax increase for cigarettes. The second removed another tax on e-cigarette liquids. After the amendments were adopted, only three members of the committee voted in favor of the bill. House Chairman Eric Nelson voted against it. For West Virginia Public Broadcasting, I'm Liz McCormick in Charleston.
As you just heard, the House Finance Committee has killed a bill that would have increased the state tax on all tobacco products, including a new tax on vaporized nicotine. The bill was looked at by some lawmakers as a revenue-increasing measure, but for others, it was the impact on the health of West Virginians that got their support. Dr. Rahul Gupta joined Ashton Mara on the legislature today to discuss the health implications of the committee's vote. Gupta is the commissioner of the Bureau for Public Health and West Virginia's chief health officer.
Well, I think this was a very reasonable tax based in a lot of scientific evidence to demonstrate that this does impact public health. And it's unfortunate that it did not go forward. As a result of that, I think we're going to see, as I mentioned today at the committee, a number of things. This tax would have prevented about 10,500 children from becoming adult smokers. It would have also prevented about 6,700 premature deaths. And according to the American Cancer Society and Campaign for Tobacco-Free Kids, it would have also helped over 13,000 West Virginians quit.
Well, I hate to say that politics are a part of it, but it is an election year, and it could be part of the reason. Looking to the future, should lawmakers take up this bill in the future? We've heard some people say that the 45-cent tax that Governor Tomlin wanted wouldn't prevent people from quitting smoking or deter people from starting, and that $1 almost wasn't enough either. Do you know, is there some kind of amount that really impacts health?
Sure. What we know is some tax is better than no tax. What was being considered today was a dollar tax. That would have actually reduced the youth tobacco smoking by 11.5%. Obviously, if you go down in that number, then the benefits start to reduce. And if you go up in that number, it's the reverse. But we do know that taxation is actually a very important strategy as a part of a comprehensive effort to control tobacco, the number one preventable cause of death, as well as the expenditures across the world.
To listen to the full version of that interview with Dr. Gupta, visit our website, wvpublic.org. You're listening to West Virginia Morning. It's 7:49. Today we will see some cloudiness with a chance of rain and even snow. Highs will be in the 30s and in the 40s today.
Support for the weather forecast is provided by Erie Insurance, putting service first since 1925. Local agents available at erieinsurance.com.
According to the Department of Health and Human Resources, children in the West Virginia welfare system are nearly three times as likely as other states to enter group care facilities. But as Kara Lofton reports, a new program called Safe at Home West Virginia is beginning to change the system.
A little background. Based on 2013 data, 7 out of 10 children in West Virginia's welfare system were placed in either a group home, residential treatment facility, psychiatric institution, or emergency shelter. These could be either in or out of state. Karen Bowling is the DHHR cabinet secretary. She says the old welfare system was flawed.
There was a pretty significant recognition on our part that we weren't necessarily doing the evidence-based practices that we should be doing to really impact the 12 to 17 year old age group and their families.
The new program is called Safe at Home. It allows West Virginia to use the federal money traditionally allotted to pay for out-of-home care and repurpose it towards support services designed to help children either return to or stay in their home community. This could be help in the form of counseling services or parent education.
What the child welfare leaders across the country are doing is advocating for a total change in the way that the federal government funds child welfare services to ensure that they're not just funding out-of-home care, but they're funding also or allowing states to have the flexibility to fund community-based services as well.
Bowling says that part of the issue in this state is that West Virginia doesn't have a lot of money. The federal funds available for state foster care costs just pay for a child's room, board, and supervision, not community-based support services. But child welfare organizations like the National Children's Bureau agree that children are best served in the family setting. Nancy Exline is the commissioner for the Bureau of Children and Families. She says in the past, the state has
engaged the kid, not the family, not the dynamics around the family, not the, all of the dynamics around the child. And so it is looking at all of that and not just looking at behaviors of the child. How does the child's behavior interact with their parent or their siblings or whatever, and making sure all of that comes into place.
They do this by providing regional facilitators who make sure children and families have access to whatever services they need to be successful. I asked if I could talk to a child or family that the program affects. The DHHR declined my request, citing privacy for families still involved in open child protective services cases, but sent me to Mindy Thornton, the Children's Program Director and Children's Outreach Liaison for the Prestera Center in Huntington. She agreed to talk about a patient's story in very general terms.
One of our first cases that we received, he was placed out of state in Ohio, and we got the chance to actually go to Ohio and visit him in his residential treatment facility.
She was quick to point out that this was not something providers usually do, but that it gave her an opportunity to assess the situation.
The one thing that stuck out in my mind most about that visit is he told us that he was going to be there through high school. And this young man was in middle school.
She told me the boy had mental and behavioral health challenges, but wouldn't give specifics beyond aggressiveness that had caused his parents to seek outside help.
That was in October, and he came home mid-February to his home, not to, you know, a foster home, not to an in-state residential. He came home. He completed his treatment program. We did a lot of things with him while he was there.
He began to have weekly contact with the new Safe at Home facilitator in his region. Meanwhile, Safe at Home provided training to the family on how to deal with his disorder.
The stepmom was new to the situation, and she was worried that she wouldn't be able to handle his behaviors in the evenings before his dad got home. And so what we did in that is we just found staff to be there when he got home from school, to be with her, to encourage her, to be the parent that we knew she would be able to be.
After a couple of days, the stepmom decided she was fine on her own, and the extra staff stopped coming.
Now he's doing well in school. He's in a special class. You know, he's not in the general population all the time, but he's in his school, in his home community, and he's doing really well.
West Virginia's plan for Safe at Home was approved in 2014. In October of 2015, they began implementing the pilot program in 11 counties. By March 2016, they had referred more than 100 youth to the program and were soliciting applications from new counties. In May, data will be published from a third-party evaluator to assess how successful Safe at Home has been. Again, Commissioner Nancy Exline.
West Virginia has one of the highest rates of congregate care in the country, one of the highest rates. And so if West Virginia is successful at this, and as that data starts to come in, it really builds the case for all of the child welfare leaders to be able to say, this works. Children have better outcomes if you allow states to use their funds more flexibly and not just paying for out-of-home care.
Exline says this program may make a real difference in the lives of West Virginia's children, and maybe even children in states across the country. Because if they are successful, other states might say, if they can do it there, then we can replicate it here. For Appalachia Health News, I'm Kara Lofton.
Appalachia Health News is a project of West Virginia Public Broadcasting, with support from the Benedum Foundation.
Best known for his 1971 acoustic pop hit Sunshine, Jonathan Edwards also has a solid background in country, folk, and bluegrass music. So here he is with I Wish I Was a Mole in the Ground on this Mountain Stage Song of the Week.
I wish I was a mole in the ground. And I wish I was a wave on the sea. I wish I was a wave on the sea. If I was a wave on the sea, you'd have no pull on me. And I wish I was a wave on the sea.
That was Jonathan Edwards with I Wish I Was a Mole in the Ground. You can hear this song and more Saturday nights at 8 on Mountain Stage right here on West Virginia Public Broadcasting. West Virginia Morning is a production of West Virginia Public Broadcasting, which is solely responsible for its content. You can keep up with all of the latest West Virginia news throughout the day on our website, wvpublic.org. And we're interested in your comments, so make sure you send them to feedback@wvpublic.org. You can follow us on Twitter at WV Public News and find us on Facebook. Support for West Virginia Public Broadcasting's news bureaus comes from Shepherd University, West Virginia University, Marshall University, and Concord University. Our producer is Ashton Mara. Our director is Teresa Wills. And I'm John Cantese. Have a good morning.